I think that there is a little bit of like overhype around generative AI
Yeah.
right now, and it's causing people to think about it in all contexts when it's a super powerful technology that can do some things really well and be like paired with other technologies. I mean, that's how all technology is in the end of the day.
Welcome to the Data Tea, our monthly podcast on the news, trends, and technology transforming data today. We're your hosts, Armand Petrosian and Satish Jayanthi, the co-founders of Coalesce. Let's get started.
Happy New Year, everybody who's tuned in the past. We got a really amazing special guest here, Tejas from HiTouch, one of the co-founders. Welcome, Tejas. You want to do a quick intro and then we can jump into some of the questions we have for today?
Yeah. Happy to. Thanks for having me. So I'm Tejas, one of the founders of HiTouch. And HiTouch is a fast-growing startup. We're a little bit over 150 people across San Francisco, New York, London, and around the world. And what we do is we sit around companies' data warehouses and we help them activate all that data. So what I mean by that is, you can use data for analysis and BI tools and stuff like that, but then you can also activate it by using it to go power marketing or power an experience that a customer is seeing on a website or power how you respond to customer service requests. And that activation of data is really what we're focused on here at HiTouch. And we do that through a few ways. We have a reverse ETL product. We kind of help coin that term in the industry. It's a funny term, right? ETL could be either direction, but reverse ETL is about taking it from the warehouse to different places. So coined that a few years ago. And we have a really nice product that can connect to hundreds and hundreds of systems and easily allow you to take data from the warehouse to those systems. We also have a CDP platform or customer data platform for marketing teams. So allowing marketers to build audiences and journeys and cohorts of customers and stuff like that in an easier way on top of any data warehouse. And then we have also released now an AI decisioning product, which is a new term, but is basically around how to use reinforcement learning and AI to look at each customer in your data platform and your data warehouse and your data science and figure out what's the ideal marketing or message or type of offer to put in front of them. So it's a very configurable and powerful platform.
Cool. Don't spoil it because I definitely have a lot more questions on the AI decisioning
all
piece. this is your first time on. I'm Armand Petrosian, CEO, co-founder. We've also got Satish, CTO here at Coalesce. But we've had your co-founder on, Cash, in the past. So he's been a guest before. It's great to have you on. Do I have it right that you both have the title co-CEO? Is that accurate or was it that way? Okay.
You got it right.
Before we jump into the AI decisioning or any of the visionary thoughts you've had, I've got to ask how that decision was made and then what it's been like from role responsibilities because it's unique. You don't see it that often. There's usually just one. So,
fair enough. It's not a super common structure. We have kind of three founders here at HiTouch. So Kashish, Cash, me, and then our co-founder and CTO, Josh. Kashish and I have been working on the businesses together for a while. So we worked on a travel business before HiTouch, before the pandemic. we worked on HiTouch together. And we've always just kind of like split the business sort of responsibilities.
Nice.
He tends to lean a little bit more towards the operations kind of the business and go to market and stuff like that. And I kind of split between go to market and product stuff. But yeah, it just felt resembling of like how we built the company so far. It's been a structure that works for us, gives us some superpowers. You know, when he's out fundraising for the company, I can, lead some other initiatives and stuff like that. But yeah, it's kind of worked for us. So.
Cool. Well, I'm sure you're the better visionary. That's why you're here, right? So we're going to talk around.
We're actually all very technical and all very, very product minded.
I figured talking to Kashish, I got that vibe. Seems like you all are very technical.
This is the last 5-6 years. So.
Yeah. Awesome. Well, the whole topic we want to talk about was in every year we do data predictions. So we'll ask a bunch of different thought leaders, co-founders, different consultants or advisors on their predictions for the upcoming year. And we did this in 2023 going into 2024. We did this leading up into the turn of the new year for 2025. And it was pretty cool seeing the results of last year's predictions. They were fairly accurate, I would say. And I think that's a testament to the different people that get involved in this, including yourself. And so I wanted to start there and just dive into some of the predictions that you had. And the core one you touched on a little bit earlier, which is how AI is going to impact organizations and vendors moving forward for this upcoming year in 2025. And so you briefly mentioned the AI decisioning functionality that you've introduced at HiTouch. And I would love to just learn more from you and where this idea or the inception of it came from, and talk to us on the concept of it. Like, what is so special or unique about being able to leverage AI for decisioning now compared to last year or 2 years prior?
Yeah, 100% happy to chat about that. So first, just what is the AI decisioning product? Basically, what we noticed is that a lot of our customers, so we work with super large companies like PetSmart or the NBA, Warner Music Group, as well as fast growing startups as well. So companies like Grammarly or Calendly or, you know, tons of different startups. And what we noticed is that a lot of them were using the data that they're building in their data warehouse. So using tools like Coalesce or different data modeling frameworks, et cetera, they're building all this valuable data in the data warehouse, their bronze, silver, gold, and layers. They were using that to make really high ROI decisions about how to engage different customers in their marketing, in their advertising, in different places like that. So a decision would be something as simple as like, well, now that we have all this nice data in our data warehouse, like Snowflake, let's make a group of customers that haven't purchased in 30 days, and let's send that to an ad platform, and let's put more money on ads towards those customers, or maybe people who have a high propensity to purchase in the next 30 days, and let's make sure that they get fully converted in the funnel. So that's a pattern we saw. And something we saw as the companies got more sophisticated in this practice of using data from the warehouse in all of their marketing, and I say that as a generalization, is they started doing things like A/B testing, right? So, or multivariate testing, right? So data teams would support marketing teams in doing things like, let's try five different tactics, maybe a 20% offer, a 10% offer, 5% offer, see, and then hold out and see what the incrementality of these different offers are. Maybe let's combine that with things like a propensity score. Maybe let's combine that with trying to message customers two times versus one times. And what we kind of started to see is that data used in really smart ways, especially the more data you build in your data platform and more features, can be used in really smart ways to really inform how you drive value in your marketing and how you personalize your marketing to get maximum ROI. But there's so many combinations and so many options and so many possibilities, and it's difficult statistically from a time perspective, from a labor perspective, to go A/B test your way through all these problems. So basically what AI decisioning is, it's kind of like a really powerful like engine that uses reinforcement learning under the hood. And you tell it like goals that you're trying to optimize towards as a business. So you could say, I want to get more people on the app. Like app engagement could be a goal. Maybe just like clicks on your emails could be a goal. Maybe purchases could be a goal if you're in like retail or e-commerce. You can weight these goals, custbased on your business. So say which one's more important than others. And then you can put in all the actions you're willing to take on customers. So for those technical in the audience, you know, an action can be anything in our reverse ETL platform. So something like syncing a field to Salesforce saying, email this customer this thing. Something like putting a customer into an audience in Facebook ads, something like telling your email marketing tool to send an email, as well as some guardrails. And then we'll basically do like high scale experimentation to produce a lot of data of like, hey, what kind of marketing, messaging, timing, variations, et cetera, are working well for different customers to get to those goals, and then use that to optimize your marketing. So it's a more like agentic form of AI, but not using generative AI or LLMs, more using reinforcement learning and data at its core. But it's something that a lot of marketers have become comfortable with, I think, through the rise of ChatGPT, and a lot of organizations have become ready for through the rise of having strong underlying data in their data warehouse and adoption of tools like Coalesce and stuff like that.
Yeah, that makes sense. The concept of agentic AI just continues to come up more and more. And so I'm super interested by that. Satish and I have talked about it for hours very recently. And so when you made that decision, or at least to take that approach, how long ago was that? And like, what was the journey like to actually get to production when it comes to rolling out AI decisioning for high-touch and your customers? Because it's fairly new, right? So this is like, this is
fairly new.
Yeah.
Yeah. We launched it publicly, I think last fall or summer. So maybe like July, okay, August timeframe. It's been something that's been in the works for a while. It's a fairly challenging product to build. So before we kind of publicly launched it, we'd also needed to work with a series of, you know, beta customers from our customer base and stuff like that, and design partners to get it to where it is today. And then, you know, there's, I would say, a few components that make it challenging. One is just like, you know, the sheer like distributed systems engineering that is required to, you know, not even like machine learning, but just required to set up all data, generate all the features, the data pipelines around the product. Second, I would say, is like the machine learning itself, which you kind of have to test it with customers to know what works well when it comes to machine learning. You can't really just build it in a black box. Obviously, we've built like nice synthetic data of like just a bunch of fake and marketing and stuff like that. But you kind of got to try it in the wild to see what techniques will actually work in machine learning. And then the last part I would say is just from a product perspective, it is like actually a visual kind of UI product that a marketing team and a data team can kind of use, where they can configure the goals, configure the actions that we're allowed to take across your email, ads, et cetera, platforms, configure like guardrails, and also get insights and correlations like, hey, customers in New York are really resonating with XYZ in the marketing, et cetera. And there's just been challenging to get all the UX and stuff like that, right? Of that, if that makes sense, it's a hard problem. There's a lot of things that don't make sense intuitively. So it's been in the works for, you know, a year and a half or 2 years at this point, even though we just launched it about 6 months ago. And we're working with some really big companies on it. So we have like a Fortune 500 retail company using it. We have Whoop, the wearable kind of fitness band company.
Yeah, that's cool.
We're doing a webinar with them in Snowflake next week. But yeah, we've been really, really excited by what we've seen so far.
Quick question there. Are you using your own models or LLMs that you have trained, or?
Yeah, great question. So we actually, the core of the decisioning in AI decisioning isn't LLMs or generative AI. It's more traditional machine learning, specifically reinforcement learning. So quite similar to what like TikTok feed uses. So I'm not a big TikTok customer myself, my girlfriend is, but you know, when you're on the feed and you just, based on how long you spend on different stuff, how long you're watching it, how fast you swipe away, use all that. If you comment, if you like it, they use all that feedback to just inform what they're sending to you, what they're showing to you in the future. That's basically what we're doing on top of a customer's company's marketing program. And reinforcement learning is a really good method for this, because we don't need to be creative. We don't need to generate new content. We trust the marketing team to do that. We're kind of figuring out what works differently for each customer. And you need that feedback loop versus just predictive ML, where you could predict the customer is likely to buy or churn, but you can't predict how well marketing will work for them without trying it. Like, you need an experiment. In terms of how we approach model building, so it's really important to our customers. I think we're seeing this trend across the industry. Data privacy, data security, confidentiality is all really top of mind. So companies are really like software solutions that push down compute into data platforms, right? Like Coalesce or like HighTouch, for example. So we are building the models, building the machine learning models in a way that's configurable by the marketing and data team in a SaaS product. But actually we're basically building a reinforcement set of reinforcement learning models for each customer independently. And we're not sharing it between customers. Which is really important to our customers when they think about AI, and you know, there could be secrets and insights that they don't want their competitors or other companies to get a hold of. We do leverage generative AI a little bit, So we leverage it for content labeling. So like, you know, email 50 is not exactly the same as email 1, but there's something similar about them. Maybe they're both discount offers. In the old world, you'd have to have a junior marketer go through everything and label one by one, or a data analyst. In the new world, we can generate a lot of features to throw in there and see if there's any correlations with LLMs, which is cool. But we don't use it for the core of the product. And for that, we just use a bunch of different models depending on the customer, Vertex, Cortex, you know, you name it. So depending on the cloud environment. Yeah.
That's cool. That makes sense. Yeah. Was there anything you wish you knew looking back on it, going through this journey, whether it was trying LLMs and realizing that reinforcement learning was a better option, or something along those lines that could have saved you some time over the course of the past year and a half that you've been going down and pursuing this path?
Yeah, it's a good question. You know, I think that, it's a super, super good question. I think that we didn't go down the path of using like a different technology from the start and then moving to reinforcement learning. We kind of started with reinforcement learning from the get-go. But there's probably a lot of small learnings that have added up around like what features work really well for marketing as a use case, or different ways to transform the data and stuff like that. Probably could be a blog post sometime.
Yeah, fair enough. Cool. And as far as AI, like clearly you've got your use case with AI decisioning. There's some with leveraging LLMs. Like we've got a similar one when it comes to documenting columns and descriptions for columns.
Yeah, that's a great use case.
Exactly, right? Like that's very, it feels like a very organic use case for leveraging an LLM. It's very intuitive. And so sounds like you found that with marketing labels, for example. Do you think that there is, do you think people are trying to square peg and round hole LLMs into certain things right now when you look around the vendor landscape, or even companies that you talk to? Are they trying to do too much when they could be doing taking a different approach and being more successful?
Yeah, I think so. I think, you know, there's ever since ChatGPT sort of took off and showed the world what generative AI is capable of. I mean, it opened my eyes for sure.
Definitely. Same here.
That people have been trying to, you know, think about everything in this like agentic LLM way. Like I've seen other marketing platforms and stuff like that. I won't name anything specific, but, you know, think about like how do we use generative AI to generate the current constructs that we already have in our platform, like queries, or how do we use generative AI to generate audiences or queries or like configuration. But I think some of these problems, I think we still as an industry in data and in all of business software, like haven't fully tapped the potential of just traditional machine learning yet too. Like in places we're using, you know, predictive technologies, we can use reinforcement learning, or we can think about all of these use cases better, or combine models in interesting ways. Or there's a lot of stigma against the old series of AI tools, right? Because they often didn't have the full data in them. They don't because they were separate from people's models. They were building a data warehouse and they're like, oh, SaaS created models don't work well, but maybe there's a different way we can approach it, like running it on the warehouse to make it work better. So I think that there is a little bit of like overhype around generative AI right now. And it's causing people to think about it in all contexts when it's a super powerful technology that can do some things really well and be like paired with other technologies. I mean, that's how all technology is in the end of the day. So I think so.
For sure. Yeah, it feels like not just overhype, but also some misconceptions on the right use cases. Yeah. And so like we've seen that firsthand talking to customers, working with other vendors where certain use cases that don't make sense for an LLM are being forced into attempting to be used for an LLM, whereas they might have been better off just doing something like you said with reinforcement learning or something more traditional comparatively.
Right. I mean, it's crazy. Like
who knows, it could change.
OpenAI apparently can do math and stuff now. So we'll see what happens. But I think that's broadly true, especially with the word agents. It's kind of become a buzzword where now people think anytime I'm trying to do some action, I need to use an LLM for that if I want to use AI, but it's not necessarily true. Like, you know, Facebook newsfeed or TikTok's automated too, right? So,
and I think the pace at which it's moving causes like another kind of anxiety, because by the time you figure out what it is, it already changed and there's a new thing that crops up. And then, you know, for example, when we started originally from, you know, the original ChatGPT LLM, from there we went into RAGs because of the hallucinations. Then we came back. That's right. Now we're agentic LLMs, you know. So there's just a lot of change in a, such a short time, which we have never seen. So it becomes harder for us to even be confident to apply to solve a particular problem.
Yeah, I fully agree. And we're always, because of how powerful tech is and how quickly it's changing and how OpenAI is, you know, announcing these new models that we can't use yet, but we can see can do awesome stuff. It even makes people who do know some of the space have to think twice on like, what are the right assumptions around what these technologies are meant for? I mean, that's right. We'll have to see.
Definitely helps perpetuate the hype. So shout out to ChatGPT for keeping us on our toes. They know they're doing a great strategy. well, that's I love high touch. You know, we use it internally. It makes a ton of sense. And the use case you're describing for AI decisioning, I'm sure is going to help a ton of different companies when it comes to marketing. And so that's a very relevant to your business trend that you see, at least from an AI perspective. What else are you excited about taking you and the high touch team out of the picture when you're looking at the market landscape? You know, for anything analytics workflow related or even marketing related, like what do you think you're most excited about when you look forward to 2025 and seeing any positive changes for the world?
Yeah. So in the data landscape, definitely a couple of things come to mind that aren't specific to marketing or our use cases at high touch. I mean, yeah, besides AI, I think there's still really interesting improvements happening at the foundational like data platform kind of infrastructure level. I think open table formats is something that we're pretty excited about here at High Touch. You know, technologies like Apache Iceberg, which seems to be, I think, as the standard in the space, but there's also others, right, like Delta Lake and stuff like that. These are pretty exciting to me for many reasons. I think one reason is, yeah, I see so many companies that have like ML workloads that, you know, just like high touch, right? That happen outside of your core data warehouse platform. Like the compute's happening outside in a different engine. So say you use Snowflake or BigQuery in the data warehouse, and then see Databricks, or even just roll your own infrastructure on the machine learning side. Previously, like we had to always copy all this data in and out or in stuff like that. And now if we have like more standardized formats upstream in like a data lake or lake house upstream that all the systems can pull from, that saves a lot of cost. It saves a lot of headache. And yeah, it's just like a better way to do things, feels like, for everyone in the data ecosystem. You know, I see opportunities for even companies like High Touch to have proprietary query engines that, or open source query engines that tap directly into those formats like Iceberg for specialized querying use cases, right? Maybe it's querying high scale event data, or maybe it's some of the ML stuff we're doing. So in the future, not something we're actively looking at, but I just think it opens up a lot of potential for everyone in the marketplace. So I'm really excited about that. Another thing that, and I guess companies were always doing this, right? It's not that crazy to adopt. Companies were always, you know, putting data in S3, et cetera, upstream. They just have like a much standardized way to do it across the stack now. How are you all feeling about Iceberg, and do you see any opportunities there?
It's been a hot topic for us as well. We agree. I think, and I'll let Satish share his thoughts, but conceptually makes a ton of sense. And I'm very curious to see the adoption. We've seen a little bit of it firsthand with the Snowflake ecosystem and our Coalesce customers, but it still feels very early. And I'm not sure if that's because it's another layer of complexity where most companies are still trying to just get their legs under them when it comes to data in the first. Yeah, exactly. Or if it's just a market development thing. It's just going to take some more time for it to emerge and become more prominent. I do think for really large companies that have a multi-cloud architecture, it becomes more and more of a no-brainer, because, you know, even though they've historically been using S3, you know, that's can be fairly limited to where it's going compared to it being in multiple other engines that S3 wouldn't typically be able to provide access to.
Yeah, or like JSON, and then they have to keep converting it for each, you know, provider.
Yeah. What are your thoughts, Tish?
Yeah, I mean, definitely pretty exciting. It's just a better S3 version, right? I mean, you know, with a database-like storage mechanism, it's centralized. And the fact that you can plug in any compute on top, any compute engine like Snowflake or whatever engine that you're working with for a particular use case, it's just very exciting for organizations to be able to do that, plug and play whatever they need, but keep this the data in one place. So,
And I haven't tried this personally yet. Maybe someone on our team has, but I think S3 even released.
That's right.
They just released that Iceberg option for S3, which is super exciting. So maybe you know, the tools around the technology need to get a little bit streamlined and easier before we'll see the rapid adoption. Like, I wonder when we'll hit the state where if I was starting a company today, or if I was moving to Snowflake today, the default way I'd implement it is through Iceberg. So I don't know. Maybe that'll be 2026. Maybe it'll be 2025. Maybe it'll be 2020.
Yeah. Let's see. I'm sure you know it takes time, a lot of time, for large organizations to make those types of decisions and shifts. So
yeah. Sure. Well, I'm just thinking, when will it even be the default for new organizations, right? Like
that's fair. That's because right now, that's probably not the case.
I don't think it is yet. So exactly. So that'll be interesting.
I don't think so either. Cool. So that's something you're excited about. Is there anything that you wish wouldn't be happening in 2025 that you see happening right now?
Oh, that's an interesting question. Huh. I think, always think about that on the high touch business. Hey, what do we need to change?
Tell us more.
On the data.
Tell us more.
Landscape. Yeah. Overall. Well, let me think about something that's interesting for the readers. I mean, there's so much go-to-market or product, et cetera, stuff, but it's oddly specific. Wouldn't be happening. Yeah, I think if I had to pick one thing, it'd be the Gen AI confusion. I wish that there's a simple framework everyone could follow that was like well understood. We will get that in 2025. We'll look at it in a positive lens, but I think that it is confusing as of now, and you know, just causes a lot of confusion, right? I think there's one side of it, which is like everyone's now excited to know how all types of AI, including machine learning, can help their business. On the flip side of it, everyone's like worried about hallucination and like all these different issues at the same time, when it's not always a concern. Yeah.
Cool. Yeah. Well, you all have built a great company, and it's a great story. It's so cool to have seen it go from, I guess, what used to be classified as reverse CTL. It still kind of is, but more focused on marketing use cases and taking out the CDP.
An expansion of it, really.
Yeah, it's like an evolution of that. And so we're wrapping up. We got about a minute and a half left. Is there anything that you'd like to share with the audience live right now, or to future listeners, that they should know about either you, the company, or the product?
Yeah, I mean, we're growing quickly. If anyone in the audience even thinks that there is a use case at your company, even if you wouldn't be the person to work on it, or you'd be supporting the marketing team, just reach out to me on LinkedIn or tejas@hightouch.com, tejas@hightouch.com. And I'll get your team set up with the platform. We've seen some pretty impressive results at these companies, you know, lifts from 10 to 40% on the AI decisioning product, as well as just a lot of more simple value driven from the core offerings like reverse ETL at Hightouch. And we're always looking for more customers to push our thinking around both the product and the ecosystem. So just reach out if there's anything interesting, or if you want to talk about any of the topics on the podcast today.
Yeah, incredible. Thanks, Tejas. Such a pleasure to have you on. Looking forward to watching the AI decisioning evolve and continue, amongst other things, for Hightouch. So appreciate you for being a guest, and sounds like I'll see you in the neighborhood, hopefully here in North Beach at some point soon, since you just moved here.
For sure.
Cool. Awesome. It'll be nice to meet you in person.
Cool.
Yeah, it'll be excellent. Great. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, our pleasure. Thanks, everybody.
Thanks, Tejas.